What's up, everybody? Welcome into the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast. Today, an important and interesting conversation about mental health in youth sports.
We are so lucky to be joined by clinical and sports psychologist Dr. Kenza Gunter, and she's amazing.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into the Junior NBA Coaches Corner podcast alongside the one and only Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. It's going to be a great conversation here. It's Mental Health Awareness Month right now here in May, and we're going to focus on mental health and youth sports with a clinical and sports psychologist, Dr. Kenza Gunter. What is fascinating to me is, let's just say, personal life. We got some issues going on over here for your boy. So as I've done more reflecting in recent months, if you will, and thinking about myself, thinking about mental health and my mental state and whatever, but thinking about it as a young athlete, God, we were just doing so many things wrong.
Like, so many things.
Just, and particularly from, I would say from the men's side of things too, or the boys' side of things, there's an element of masculinity and all this stuff that goes into how we're supposed to train our athletes to play, which is really counterproductive.
Let me just be your internal, external homegirl. You're going to be all right, Kyle. You're going to be all right. Okay.
My girl.
We're going to be all right. We're going to get through it. Yeah, you know, it's crazy. Like, when Shannon and Candace and those guys sent our guests for this week, I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I did sports psychology one time. Like, I remember that in college. And it was like the idea of slowing things down mentally so that you could enhance your performance physically. I get that, right? But I think for me, that conversation really has only been had in conjunction with sports. And now, as a society, we're having the conversation at large, which I think is so healthy. But I don't know, Cuff. Like, I think the analogy of our mental health being the same as our physical health is super cool, but we all know how quickly our plates fill up, right? And if you're not having an issue, probably one of the first things that gets put out the window in terms of, I got things I got to get done. I'm fine. I just got to go. Give me some coffee.
You're 100% right. But that's also like, with our bodies, the bodies break down at some point. They tell you, you got to stop, but our mind doesn't necessarily do that. And I think for people like ourselves too, trained as athletes, you continue to push through and push through and not like stop and assess. Let's get right to it. Dr. Gunter's with us. Thank you so much for taking your time to chat with us. Obviously a very important topic and one that has changed in our society in recent years. That's kind of where I want to start, Dr. Gunter, in terms of your work, but also just and maybe the perception of people in our country, more broadly the world. How has, you know, sports psychology and the work you're doing around mental health with athletes, how has that changed in the last 5 or 10 years to where we are today?
Well, certainly the conversation has increased, right? And we have more and more instances where we see people sharing their personal stories. And we also see society at large being more aware of the importance of thinking about and attending to mental health. I think as we think about mental health and wellness and the intersection of sport, that conversation and the increase there really has been driven by our athletes and the courage and the vulnerability that they have displayed in talking about their journeys, but including the parts that speak to how they have managed their mental health, some of the challenges they have faced. And so I think as they have increased that conversation and demanded us to see them as full people and not just athletes, that also has spirited the conversation in society at large for us to think more about how we are full people, which includes our mental health and wellness as well. And so I think additionally, the things that we've experienced collectively have forced us all to pause and think about the ways in which we're taking care of ourselves. So I think it's a combination of, again, the courage of athletes talking about themselves beyond the performer and being human, and also the things in our world that have forced us to personally look at and think about how I serve myself from top to bottom, which includes mental health and wellness.
Dr. Gunter, I am often left with, how do I honor, acknowledge mental health, but also respect all the things that I think sports taught me, right? Like, I'm fortunate as I reflect back on my experience as a youth playing sports, there are not horror stories, right? But was I pushed to a limit and asked to be better and to give more? Yes. And so how do we kind of combine the two, right? The ideas that are pertinent to mental health, but also the things that make the sports experience in terms of teaching us hard work and competitiveness, how do we marry the two in the most healthy way?
Yeah, no, you think that's a really great question, because I think sometimes what we have done in the world of sport is we have positioned health and performance is sometimes being separate from one another when really they go together, right? And so it's not that when thinking about how to create mentally healthy atmospheres and how to foster mental health, we're saying you can't challenge and you can't push and you can't do those things that may feel like it's pushing me beyond where I can go. But it is saying that we have to think about when too much is at play, right? When is the push too much, right? Because as I think about some of the athletes who've shared their stories, I think about Shamequa Holdsclaw, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love, and many others, Naomi Osaka, Simone Biles. These athletes are elite. So it's not that the mental health challenges or moments that they experienced, it's not that those got in the way of them being able to be successful and elite. It's simply that learning how to manage them and manage those moments and continue to move forward allowed them continue to move towards greatness. So I think that's a part of it, is understanding that health and performance are connected, and health is the foundation of performance. And we know that when it comes to physical health, right? If we were having this conversation about physical health, there would be very little question as to, well, when is too much, right? We have that awareness. When it comes to mental health, we don't talk about that. And so I think first we need to talk about it. And also, just the last thing I'll say here is think about it proactively. Because when we say the term mental health, we often think mental illness, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't do that with physical health, right? When we think about physical health and how can you maintain and enhance your physical health, we think about the importance of nutrition, strengthening your muscles, right? We think about cardio, we think about diet and exercise, we think about all of those things you do, sleep, to proactively take care of your health. We're talking about the same thing with mental health. How can you proactively engage in activities and behaviors that strengthen that mental and emotional muscle so that you'll have some tools in the toolkit, so when the stress and adversity comes, you'll be able to handle it, instead of only thinking about our mental health in moments of distress and crisis.
Yeah.
So I think that's two things: looking at it proactively, thinking about how health and performance are connected, and really being intentional about developing that mental and emotional muscle from an early age.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that shows my complete ignorance, in all honesty, because I'm like, yeah, why shouldn't it be preventative? It should be proactive, like just not thinking about when something is actually broken or you're really, really struggling with something, then you have to address it. I kind of take a hard left turn here a little bit, and stick with me here. Mon and I have had these conversations with different folks in different places. We have serious racial issues in our country, and there are serious problems that have to be addressed. But at the same time, anybody that points to everything as racism, I'm like, you're devaluing the real issues here. You're devaluing what's really important. And there are other things. Everything is not that one thing. It can't be all that. That said, what is a situation like Ben Simmons initially saying, you know, he has mental health issues, and we kind of respect to that. And then we get to the round the playoffs. It's all a back issue. It's all his back issue. And then all of a sudden he decides not to play in game four and he goes back to mental health. So when is there a level of, you said the athletes are carrying the conversation forward, but then does that devalue the conversation as it goes forward when it seems like we all question what's going on here? And when we didn't question as much in the beginning, but then when it becomes physical versus mental, it kind of, does that hinder the progress made, I guess, in situations like that? Or am I, again, just an ignorant assessment of this?
No, I mean, it's an interesting question, but I think the thing to keep in mind there is that the information that we have is simply the information that's been presented. Right? So we don't know the full story and the full lived life of an individual. And I think that's true for anyone. We think about the news stories that we read. We think about what we may see on social media. We think about the tidbits of information we hear, and we take that and act as if it's a full and complete story. Right? And so when I think about how we attend to and really honor the mental health of individuals, I'm not just talking about their mental health. I'm talking about their lived experience. Right? And we all live in context. And none of us exist in one moment and one moment only. So in the same way that things may change for others, right? We have to think about, things change in my life. Why is that not true, that things may not change in someone else's life? So I think we have to be really careful about taking bits of information and thinking we know a person's whole story, right? And that's true for Mr. Simmons, that's true for anyone. I think what we really need to be conscious of doing is continue to promote the awareness and education around mental health to better understand what it is, right? And to think about how we not only can promote individuals taking care of themselves, but we can also do a better job of creating healthy environments and creating healthy spaces where folks are allowed to thrive and be successful and accomplish tasks, but they're also allowed to have hard times. We say this phrase of it's okay to not be okay, but are we really promoting environments where that's true, right? And so I really think that's where we have an opportunity to think about how we are offering support and how we are taking this mental health conversation beyond the individual and beyond the symptoms to really think about it as lived experience and think about it in context. You started that statement with, there's a lot of racial issues going on in the States, definitely, but in our world, there's a lot of human rights issues going on. And so a lot of individuals who hold different cultural identities and who live at the intersection of identities are experiencing different things that could impact their mental health, because mental health, again, is not just impacted by individual things, but also social and societal. So again, I say we have to be really conscious of being aware that everybody lives in context. And just because we heard a story doesn't mean we know the whole context. Our task is to think through how are we of health, our health, how are we creating spaces that promote health for others? And we should be always mindful of extending the grace to others that we would want someone to extend to us if we were experiencing moments of distress.
That's good, Doc. That's good.
We are very quick to judge. We're very quick to compare. Like, we're very quick to assume that we know someone's story because we think of what we would do in a situation when we don't even have the full details of the situation. We have the story as it's been reported, right? And that's true for anyone, right? So when I think about anyone who comes out and shares something about their personal journey, whether it's related to, again, I think about Simone Biles and saying, no, I'm not performing. Like, people had judgments around that, right? Well, she's at the Olympics, she should perform. Who are you to say what somebody should do when you're not walking in their shoes, right? I think we have to just pause for a moment and understand that even though we're in this 24/7 news cycle, information is everywhere. We think we know, right? I remember there used to be a tagline, you think you know, but you have no idea. I think that was like the E! True Hollywood story, right? And so just remembering that everybody has a much fuller story than what we may have access to.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good so for us true. To remember that too, Mon, because like we're put into situations, doctor, to always have a thought. You have to have an opinion on this. And you're like, you're trying to formulate an opinion based on what you just said, reports or who you're talking to. And it's dicey. It's not an easy thing to be doing. Or not a smart thing to be doing, in all honesty.
Yeah, and there's always an opportunity, right? There's always an opportunity that lives there. The opportunity may not be making a commentary on this situation that I have limited information about. The commentary may be, how can we as a society do better to offer grace and humility and compassion when we think about people that may be experiencing challenges? Like, that may be where the story lives, right? And to think about, again, I bring it to yourselves, how would you want someone to handle you in that situation? What story would you want someone to share about you, right? What would support look like for you? Right, and think about that as a part of the story as well.
Dallin, it's so funny because Dallin is right. By profession, it is my task to sum up what limited information I may have, to your point, Dr. Gunter, and kind of assess it accordingly, right? And so I have been one, and I've said this on television, I am one who is, if you say mental health, that's a period, and how can I support you, right? Like, that, whether it is rightfully or wrongfully, or whoever thinks they are the arbitrator of whether or not that clause is appropriate, I am one who believes that that has to be a period at the end of the sentence, and we need to give you space to address whatever it is that you believe needs to be addressed. But that's not the nature of the sports consumption cycle. Like, it's not the nature of sports talk radio. And so it is something that we have to think really deeply about. But in your answer to Dallin, you mentioned intersectionality. And June we're coming up with celebrating Mental Health Month. We also are celebrating Pride. How do you deal with athletes that sit at crossroads when it comes to their identities?
So when I think about the work that I do, and people will often label it as you work with athletes holistically. And what I like to say is, yes, but what that really means is that I'm trying to work with the whole person. In order to work with the whole person, I have to have an idea of who the whole person is. I understand that the performance that they may do in basketball or any other sport that they participate in, that's what they do. But it's really my job to understand who they are. So from my first interaction and meeting with the person, I'm trying to understand who they are. Certainly, I may make some assumptions based on what I see in terms of cultural demographics, but that still doesn't tell me information, because just because I see something doesn't mean that's how a person identifies. So it's really important for me to ask questions about how folks identify, what experiences in their life have been important to them, and what is it that they want to talk about as they're sitting to start working with me, right? Mm-hmm. I allow that to be a collaborative process. Certainly I may be the expert as it relates to mental health and different strategies, tips, interventions that we can use, but it's important for me to think about, who is this person sitting across from me, and how is who they are intersecting with who I am? Because that's the space that we're creating in the room, because I have identities that I'm bringing in the room with me as well, right? And so it's really important to So again, it goes back to that everybody lives life in context. It's in context to the things that happen around us, but it's also in context to the identities that they hold. And so really being conscious of leaving room for folks to share who they are and how that's important to what they do in their sport. And then I honor that, and we might incorporate culturally relevant strategies that go along with whatever other interventions we may use to help them with mental performance or to help them with mental health. But it really is about, quite simply, understanding intersectionality is really all about just trying to understand who is this person sitting across from me. Now, who is this athlete? Not just who is this athlete, who is this person? And the cultural identities become important because they influence how that person sees the world, how the world sees them, the experiences that they have in sport, outside of sport, and all of that shows up in the room when I work with somebody. Because as much as we sometimes like to think that sport is a neutralized space, it's a microcosm of the world. So the same isms and ills that exist in the world exist in sport, right? I can't be naive about that. But I also recognize that may not be their primary area that they're wanting to talk about or address, but I still got to leave room for it in the space that we're creating as we work together.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. I think maybe you hit on a couple things in there about simply addressing the full person, not thinking just as an athlete, but a lot of coaches listen to this podcast, young athletes will as well. So when you're thinking about younger people too, you know, grassroots, even at the college age, as they're kind of in their more formative years, what would be some advice you would give to coaches and or athletes as they try to navigate their growth in the sport, but in a world where mental health is being more top of mind and allowed to bring it up? What should coaches do? What should young athletes be thinking about?
So, you know, when it comes to coaches and youth athletes and youth sport in general, I think the starting point is to recognize that these young people are people who are having full experiences. I think sometimes we treat kids as though they're not old enough yet to have independent thoughts and feelings and to react to different things. And they are. So let me back up a little bit, because we keep talking about mental health, but I just want to offer a quick definition of mental health, which I probably should have done earlier, but here, we'll do it now. Again, when we talk about mental health, we often think mental illness. Mental health, by definition, really is all about a state of well-being. It's a state of well-being in which a person can reach their goals, connect with others, and which they can productively function in the spaces that they're in. So that's what we're talking about. So when you say it like that, how can I help the mental health of these youth athletes? What you're saying is, how can I get them to reach their goals? How can I get them to connect with others? How can I help them to adequately function in the spaces that we're in? Here, we're talking about sport. So think about the ways in which you may cultivate that, right? Well, ask the kids how they're doing. Help them develop language to talk about their feelings. Help them develop language to think about what they're thinking about, right? How can you pour into a kid that not only helps and teaches them about the sport, but also helps them to become self-aware, that helps them to think about self-regulation, that's motivating, that's encouraging, that gives them a positive experience, even if it might be a challenging one, right? That goes back to the question you asked earlier on, how do we blend those two? Challenging environments don't have to be unhealthy and toxic environments. Mm-hmm. Challenging can be motivating and encouraging and inspiring and uplifting, and it can teach you how to manage adversity, manage difficulty. It can also teach you how to manage success. So thinking about the ways in which we are pouring into these kids and boosting confidence and esteem while teaching sport and encouraging fun, I think that really becomes important too. And when you ask kind of what can the kids do, I think it really starts with the parents and the coaches at the youth sport level, because they are the ones that are setting the stage for the environment. So understanding these kids have full experiences, these kids have mental health, which means we want to foster and increase and strengthen that muscle in them early. So let's give them language to talk about how they're feeling. Let's give them space to talk about how they're feeling. Let's encourage, motivate, praise, and promote what they're doing so that they can have a good foundation to handle some of the challenges that we know come in life and possibly in sport.
Practically, Dr. Gunter, how would you advise parents? Like, I think I would like to believe that maybe I'm naive. Am I naive, Cuff? That the crazy parent stereotype represents the exception and not the rule. I want to believe that. Right. I want to believe that there are sports parents like my parents who were like, we're going to start, we're going to finish, we're going to support you in a healthy way. But I think we often hear the cautionary tales about crazy sports parents. So how would you advise parents?
So let me ask you all this question. How many of you, when you were growing up, which of you learned about mental health and learned about proactive strategies to take care of yourself from a mental and emotional standpoint when you experience stress? When did you learn that?
I'm almost laughing because it's like, I didn't learn it as an athlete. I mean, that never was discussed in any way, shape, or form in
my career. And I joked with Alan about this in the open, Dr. Gunter, but so we had a sports psychologist at Georgetown.
Okay.
And I don't, like, to be fair, we didn't tap into him until we got relatively good and had the chance to do some things.
Mm-hmm.
So it became a proactive conversation in terms of us actually believing in ourselves. And he was the first person that tipped me off to, like, visualization and, like, breathing exercises. But just when we was scrubs, no, we was like, y'all need to work harder.
But here we go. But you said Georgetown, that's college, right? So when you ask, what can we do for parents? Go ahead.
We had in high school, I remember this, I won't say his name, but his dad was a psychologist. He was a sports psychologist. He offered to come talk to our team. And I remember our high school coach being like laughed him out of the room. Like in retrospect, now that was my high school coach, dude, like he helped me. But there are a lot of things as I'm looking back as an adult, be like, we should have done this way differently.
Right.
And in college,
here's
too.
My point. Exactly. Here's my point. We as adults never received education about what mental health is, what mental health support looks like, how you develop an awareness of what's going on with you internally for your feelings, your thoughts. So when you ask, what should we do to parents? We should educate them. We should first start and have somebody come in to talk to our parents about what this mental health thing is and what their role is in trying to help proactively foster mental health in their children, right? I think we can't just assume that just because we say, oh, make sure you're being supportive and encouraging and you're fostering a mentally healthy athlete for your child when you go home. Well, what does that even mean, right? Because we've never been taught, we don't have education around it. So I really think the first step is to educate parents and to equip them with knowledge and tools that then allows them to think about what can I actually do instead of assuming that when we say something, they know what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think that's true for coaches too. I think it's providing education about what is mental health and what does it look like to offer mental health support? What does it look like to engage in mental skills training? What does it look like to be encouraging and motivating? Because some people think that me highlighting the faults that you have and me pointing out the mistakes that you made, that some people think that that's motivation and encouragement. Like I'm telling you what it is you need to work on, right? That may not be true for everybody. That may not feel motivating and encouraging for everybody. So I think we really have to back up and do a widespread education tour, if you will, to help folks understand what it is we're talking about, why this is important to not only sport performance, but why this is important to the health and development of your child, right? And why this is not just applicable to your child, but why it's important for coaches and parents to think about their mental health. I say this for coaches all the time. We certainly focus a lot on equipping coaches to be better coaches. Let's equip coaches to be able to take care of themselves as people, because that will translate to them being better coaches. If we talk about how is the coach mentally healthy? How are the parents mentally healthy? That's also going to have a huge impact on what space they allow for their kids and how they promote and advocate for truly creating spaces that allow for the range of experience, which includes success, fun, accomplishment, but also failure, difficulty, and challenge. Like, we gotta do some education and equip folks differently instead of assuming that they know what we're talking about.
You just said mental health skills check. Did I hear you say that in your answer?
Skills training.
Skills training. Okay, can you give us a couple while we got you? Because what are these practically? Like, I can go home tomorrow, and I'm trying to convince my goddaughter to play sports, y'all. But anyway, I can go home tomorrow and encourage her to do this exercise with me. Because I imagine that all of it is not high level, you need a doctor stuff. It's just being able to communicate effectively.
So the first thing I would say is awareness. Just being able to in any moment say, hey, what am I feeling right now? And to be able to name a feeling, like to actually have a feeling word beyond happy, sad, anxious, mad, I don't know, right? Like being able to describe feelings. I feel nervous. I feel excited. I feel calm. I feel peaceful. Like just developing language to describe emotion. So one thing, awareness. Other skills that come into play, you named one already, Monica, visualization. Being able to see something in your mind's eye, right? To see yourself doing something, particularly when we talk about skills, being able to see yourself doing a skill before you do it or after you've done it can help you to reinforce that muscle memory that promotes that skill development. Some of the other skills that we talk about, goal setting, just identifying something that you want to accomplish, setting a timeline for that and working towards that goal. That's a mental skill. Thinking about self-talk, what are you saying to yourself? Because regardless of what other people might be saying around you, you're always with yourself. And so what are you saying to yourself? Are you saying things to yourself that are positive, motivating, encouraging, or at least that are neutral and not all critical? All of us, I imagine there are many people listening who, if I say, Do you have an internal critic that gets really loud when you feel like you've made mistakes? And everybody will say yes. And our internal critics are usually really loud. But what about your internal advocate or your internal cheerleader? Mm. Do you have
your internal homegirl that got silence all
that? Your internal homegirl, right? Who encourages you, right? And who says, yeah, girl, maybe you didn't do exactly what you want to do, but it's okay. Just get back up and keep going, right? That is self-talk. That is developing a skill that allows you to mentally stay present and stay focused in the game when you need to. Speaking about presence and focus, mindfulness is another skill. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about mindfulness and meditation and a lot of different apps, Headspace, Calm, and Breathwork, and other apps that teach those skills. But what mindfulness does is it teaches you the art of staying present focused, being in the present moment without judgment, right? That's a skill that can not only help you in sport, but helps you in life. So all of those, goal setting, self-talk, visualization, mindfulness, just developing awareness, learning how to manage your energy, learning how to interact with others and communicate, all of those are mental skills that you can use and teach to kids that, mm-hmm. that develop a foundation, again, not only for sport, but also for life.
Man, I would say end it there, but I have to ask this question because we're in this current, like, just be real, we're like, Twitter is a cesspool. Like social media by and large is just, it's just not good. It's not like a positive thing in the world. That said, it is part of everybody's life in some regards. So particularly for athletes, when you can get that vitriol directly as soon as the game ended, how do you counsel, again, young athletes or professionals, whatever it is, on dealing with social media in that kind of one-to-one immediate interaction that's usually rather negative?
Very intentionally, right? Like, how do you do it? You have to have an intentional conversation about the pros and the cons of social media, because certainly there are some ways in which athletes have used social media to their benefit. If there's a story that they want to share themselves, they're able to do that without having to go anybody. They're able to create the story, present the narrative that they want. And that can be a very powerful thing to use your voice in that way. Now, on the flip side, I think you're right. Social media has created an environment in which people feel emboldened and feel like they have the right to comment on, judge, criticize, say whatever they want to say without consequence, right? And some of the things that people say on social media can be extremely hurtful and just downright vicious. And so it really is talking to kids about what social media is and helping them to understand all things in moderation, right? Understanding how they use it, but also checking in with them, right, about their use and about the information that they may be receiving or the comments that they may be getting. I think about some of these college athletes, particularly in the Final Four comes to mind, when death threats, right, mm-hmm. coming through social media because they missed a shot, right? Like that's a hard thing for an adult to manage, nevertheless a kid. And so I certainly think having conversations about proper social media use, about the emotional impacts of using social media, and then encouraging moderation. Again, if I'm working with an athlete, I can't sit with them and manage their social media use, but I can certainly talk to them about healthy ways to use it and encourage them to fast and step away from it at different times, because that too is important. So being really intentional about education and coping strategies when things like that happen, but also encouraging to step away when it becomes too much, because it can become too much.
Dr. Gunter, so good.
I mean, is there anything else we should, like, that we didn't touch on? Question, like, just open the floor. What else would you like to say about this? Because I think it's a topic that is so important that is getting some more attention, but not that's due, if you will.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I've talked about mental health in terms of it being something that is reflective of lived experience, not just signs and symptoms. I don't know if I've said this explicitly, but I also just want to highlight mental health is a continuum, right? We shouldn't mm-hmm. be scared to have this conversation, that it certainly is a continuum that does include illness. So certainly there are diagnosable medical conditions that people have to manage, and there's treatment available for that. But again, it's a range. Mental health is a range that includes wellness and illness. And we've done a really interesting job of stigmatizing the illness piece. But as we continue this conversation, I want us to expand and to think about the wellness piece too. It's not just about addressing moments of distress, but it's also about how can we proactively take care of ourselves. And I'll leave it with the analogy of physical health. If you wake up one morning and you feel like, let's just say you have a cold, right? Depending on your symptoms, you may do things at home to kind of try to take care of yourself. You may get rest, you may drink some orange juice, right? Like you may do things, take some vitamins at home to try to manage your symptoms. If the symptoms get a little bit worse, you may go to the store and get some medicine, over-the-counter medicine that you bring home, take use it for yourself. If it gets a little worse, you might go to the doctor, right? Depending on your level of symptoms. And then after all of that, after receiving treatment, you may feel better on the other end of that, right? And you can go back to functioning and doing your thing and feeling like you are physically healthy. Let's think about mental health in the same way. There are some things that happen that we can manage on our own. We can develop self-care strategies, techniques, coping skills that we can use to deal with things that impact us mentally and emotionally. There are some times where we may need a little more intervention. So I may need to reach out to a coach or tell a parent what's going on, a teacher, what's happening with me in order to get some additional support. I may need to use my social support system in order to help me manage. There are times when I need more professional help. So in the same way that when you have a physical condition, you may go to a doctor, there are times when you may need to reach out to a counselor or a therapist for more support, or a psychiatrist for medication if that's what's needed. The goal in that is to help you to do the same thing that we did in physical health, get you back to the point of feeling healthy, right? So instead of thinking about it as mental health is one thing, it's a continuum, it's a range. Treatment is available across that continuum, and we really have to be more, continue the conversation and continue the intentionality behind taking care of ourselves from top to bottom, which includes our mental health and wellness as well.
Dr. Gunter, you were tremendous. Thank you for your time.
So I know
it's you're being pulled in all different directions, but thank you for spending some time with us. It was outstanding. We really appreciate it.
Thank you all for the opportunity. I really appreciated you all and the conversation. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coach's Corner. For more, go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.